Damn it, Nick.
I love being on here with you guys, Nick and Joe. I really appreciate it.
Literally too long didn't read.
TLDR, you guys are awesome.
I almost went full Belichick and just coughed and snorted and hawked up shit as we were going live there. But I will do my best to bury that and suppress that. We're going to have a very ironic discussion in a moment because you are a robot and we're going to have some discussion about robots. But until then, your robot, by the way, has made us quite a bit of money there, Nicholas. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, listeners of all people are probably going, what the fuck is that? Listeners of all ages, Geeks Worldwide Radio and the Dork Shared Gooniverse proudly present to you with just the warmth of our hearts on this cold March day, the greatest podcasting team in the world. Here's your favorite comic book writer, Nick Fryer. I'm your friendly neighborhood bad cracker, Dr. Joe. Did I say hooker? Perhaps.
I didn't hear that. Now I did. Well,
okay. I can't finish. Yeah, said that before.
I'm sure you haven't. That's a lie.
We're off the friggin' rails already. Greatest podcasting team in the world. I did that part already. We're the TLDR Comic Club podcast, Nicholas. I'm a little off the rails, but I'm going to try and pull it together. How you doing, my friend?
You take a second, and I'll remind the people to go make sure you subscribe to one of our audio channels. And honestly, you should also be on one of our video channels as well, just to see Joe whenever he's struggling through one of his intros. Usually he's money. But anyways, you want to follow us on one of our audio channels specifically, because that's the only place you can get Fireside Chats. And we tell you guys all the time, we never know when we're going to get one. I will say this week, you got one on Monday, but you're not going to be getting one at least, you know, in the coming days because we're doing a mainline episode. But we just had, was it three in a row, if I'm not mistaken, right? We did Little Black Book, we did Tony Fleece, and then we did Sean Lewis. I think those were all 3 weeks in a row, if I'm not mistaken, or three over 4 weeks, something to that degree.
It was three in a row because every time I thought, I can pick a book, we can read it. Nope. And it was so much so, Nicholas, that I completely forgot that we were doing a mainline. Yep. And I was just planning on doing, I was like, oh, we get a break. I can just do what's new this week.
Yeah, it's crazy. But that's the thing. We never know when that's going to happen. So it's why you always got to make sure that you're subscribed to one of our audio channels, especially in case I freeze like I have right now, which is never not frustrating. But yes, make sure you subscribe to one of our audio channels. Because and leave a 5-star rating and review. Otherwise, you're learning the real meaning of Backcracker. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, Geeks Worldwide Radio, Amazon. I think that's all the places. But Joe, why don't you tell the people a little bit about our chat with Sean Lewis while I get my shit together?
Yeah, well, the frozen still of you right now is priceless because it looks like you're something's going on, underneath the desk there. And
jeez,
yeah, that's where we're at today. But no, we talked to Sean Lewis about his upcoming book, Bear Pirate Viking Queen. And this book is something else. It's 72 pages. It's watercolor. It's absolutely gorgeous and wild. And watercolor is one of those mediums that, you know, with an artist, it's very loose in the sense that there's the lines and the colors aren't tight. But somehow, right, this is beautifully drawn, beautifully colored. There's some vicious action scenes in this book. And so we had an absolute blast talking to Sean about that, the process, how he came to work with his artist, whose name's escaping me, you know, at the moment. And I apologize. We'll get that name in just a second. Who's the artist on Bear Pirate Queen?
I am getting that momentarily. It is Jonathan Marks Baravecchia. Which you did get right on the first try. But yeah, it was a really interesting experience when it came to the art, because as we said to Sean, like, you and I are just so used to like flying through books as we read them. Like, we're not that we don't want to enjoy them, but we're just reading so much different stuff. So we're used to like a level of pacing that we've just come accustomed to, that we see quite a bit in comics. And then with this one, it's like, as we were reading Bear Pirate Viking Queen issue one, which, a reminder, the FOC is coming up. It's on the 1st of April. So make sure you head to your local comic shop. If you haven't already, let them know this week that you want it on your pull list. But yeah, as I was reading, it's like, whoa, let's slow this down a second. And I even went back a couple pages to just like regroup. And when you like give this the time that it deserves, it's an experience. And we talk about that quite a bit. It's really something special when you're able to do that with a comic book.
Yeah, this is a visually stunning book. And you know, one of the things we talked about with Sean was that you could strip the book. And this is Sean's writing is excellent, but this is one of those books where you could strip it of all of the narration and all the dialogue and just enjoy it and get a good sense of the story just from the art, you know, itself. So this is a book I highly recommend. I mean, we've had Sean on the show now, I think 5 times, right? There's a reason for that. His books, they tell great stories. They move us. I mean, I remember talking about Bliss on the show. One of the many times I've actually cried on this program, but like he's just the way he writes. And then like, we're so used to him, you know, in his books, either being with, Hayden, Sherman, I almost did it again. Oh wow, what's her name there? She was the artist on Bliss. I'm having
Caitlin Yarsky.
Thank you, Caitlin Yarsky. Right, like we're used to Sean, you know, writing with a couple of different artists. So with Berevecchia there, like this is a completely different, you know, experience. So highly recommend it. Check out the chat. Make sure you put it on your pull list. You're gonna love it. I think you said it was gonna be 3 issues, 3 sort of epically long issues. So
yeah, they're set, like the first issue 72 pages. I believe that's something that's kind of maintained throughout. And the other big thing is too, when I read the end of the first issue, I believe you had the same reaction. I was like, huh, this feels like it could have been just its own thing. Yeah. But we know we're getting more story. And Sean says that is something that's gonna be maintained throughout each of the 3 issues that we're going to get. So I love that when you're getting like a whole meal with just one issue and then 72 pages. I mean, that's pretty awesome.
But it went by quickly. It didn't feel like I was reading 72 pages.
Yeah. So the last thing we want to talk about before we get to catching up, there's always like news floating around in the comic book industry, just stuff that's not related to the stories. We try and keep it primarily to the stories just because like that's the shit that we care about most. But one quick sidestep before we get into catching up. I know the AI discussion is always something that's kind of in the mix of things. And the joke that Joe was making is in my day job, I helped develop tools that just are intended to help people make smarter bets in sports. And that is a tool. That is not artificial intelligence.
Hashtag Friarbot.
Yes, you can call it whatever you want, but it's not that. In the art world, we're seeing it pop up more and more. I don't think anybody, like, you go on TikTok and if you see anything like art related, like that's not from a known artist, like there's just a certain aesthetic that you know. And we saw rumblings of like stuff getting published that, you know, was AI involved, but it kind of, as you and I talked about it, it seemed like at least the person who was like bringing it up originally is just some rando, right? It wasn't anybody like,
yeah, it was like an armchair superhero, right? Like, or like it's one of these people that says, like, you know, who's watching a sporting event and pretends to know, like, oh, I know what kind of injury that person sustained. It was pop, 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 right? So there's been, you know, and I believe it started on Reddit too, but some rumors that DC, you know, and its artists were sort of using AI to kind of generate, you know, some of the art for their books. And I'm reading this and I'm going through Twitter sort of from where this sort of originated. And it's literally just some dude, like, just like pointing out, like, oh, well, look at this. And then pop, 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 pop. And I was like, that sounds really fishy. Mm-hmm. It sort of involved, you know, an artist of mine that, you know, that I love very, very much, Andrea Sorrentino. But I don't really give it any credit because it just seemed like a bunch of fucking hogwash. But it led to you and I having a discussion to which I said, we need to save this for Tuesday or whenever we record, because something's going to get lost over text. Mm-hmm. And so I preface it by saying that I'm 100% in agreement with you because I know how strongly you feel about AI.
Thank you.
And the role of AI when it's being used, you know, by, you know, for example, you know, if studios, for example, are cutting out the artists in general, just using their previous artwork to create new stuff, right? That the artist had nothing to do with whatsoever, or whether it be writing, right? Same thing.
Yeah.
That is absolutely 100% fucking disgusting, right? And that should never happen. There's no place for that whatsoever. Right. And I think in general, we agree upon that as well as other things involved in AI. But it got me thinking a little bit, a little devil's advocate, but also just sort of looking at it from a different angle. Right. In the sense of, OK, like technology evolves just like everything else does. Right. And we're at this place now where AI is so fucking prevalent. Right.
Crazy, man. I saw a commercial like I think we see like Google, like the Samsung Galaxies have it, but I saw Grammarly like has it. I was like, what the heck?
Well, Tyler Perry, right, was going to be creating this massive studio or whatever, for, and then he's like, I'm going to stop that. I'm going to save myself hundreds of millions of dollars because we can use AI to create the stuff that, you know, I don't need to hire, you know, actual people to do.
Wow.
So again, right, No place for that. But I was sort of thinking about AI in the sense of like an artist, for example, experimenting with the technology, not to cut corners or not to do the work, but as a tool to maybe create something new. Right. And I know that as I'm saying that, I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth.
Mm-hmm. I see where you're going, though. Like,
but you see what I mean? Like, because yes. It's sort of like, okay, we have this tool. Is there a way that I can utilize that
mm-hmm.
to maybe invent something new, or to go to places that we may not have seen before, mm-hmm. right? Versus like, oh, I'm just gonna, you know, I'm gonna take credit for this work that I didn't fucking do. Now, right. I don't know. Like, is that a blurred line? Is it really just black and white? You know, or is there an evolution there that, you know, this could be useful?
I think the idea that you're saying makes perfect sense. Like, I will start off with that. I do think, like, this is like one of those few like very polarizing conversations where I have like a very strong stance on it. Normally I'm just like, you know, it's usually somewhere blurred, but with this, I'm still anti that idea, because my concern is like, okay, like you're looking at it from like a healthy perspective. Like, this is how it should be used. But anytime we start mixing into stuff, like, this isn't just a tool. Like, this is artificial intelligence that is going to have the capability to grow. And then I'm putting my tinfoil hat on, but it can grow beyond just being a tool that is controlled by us. So that's like the tinfoil hat bit. But I also just don't trust people to then start utilizing it. Like, if you're throwing these ideas into the AI, then it just, where does it end? So what you're saying does make sense, because that's also like, if I'm like an upcoming artist and I want to like learn, like you want to learn from other artists, like let's say you're a big Capullo fan, you want to like, what can I take from him? What can I learn from him? How can I like have a style that's influenced by him, but also my own? Like, that's kind of what you're talking about, right?
Well, yeah. So like, you know, cause I think of it like this, right? Art for a long time, right? We'll just take complicated, was always pen, paper, ink and paper. Right. Mm-hmm. And then now you take a look and a lot of are doing things digitally, right? It allows them to do things that they might not normally be able to do with just the regular materials they have. Right. Right. So I was thinking about AI in that sense, right.
Oh.
As another sort of digital tool that, you know, can they like, for example, Photoshop, I do a lot of the Photoshops, you know, for Instagram and stuff like that. Like, I can buy an upgrade to have AI capabilities. And that's mostly to, you know, it seems like to, you know, be able to, you know, make things easier, or, you know, mm-hmm. right, things of that nature, right? But it's a slippery slope, because at the same time, I'm asking the computer to create something for me,
mm-hmm.
That I couldn't create,
right?
And that's, I think, at the heart and the crux of the matter of all this is you're not actually doing it. And I was sort of thinking at an angle of like, well, is there a way where we could sort of take that and, you know, you know, use it to, you know, evolve what we can do. But I, it's a very slippery slope. And this is why we couldn't have this discussion over text.
You're right.
I was trying to convey that. And you're like, I'm going to fucking kill you, AI.
Yeah. It's very much one of those things where I can get like irrationally
fired up real fast.
I did. And I think we were talking like it was either early in the morning or late at night. I can't
remember. It was late at night.
It wasn't ideal timing. Either end of that spectrum, you're rolling the dice. But yeah, like I think in the end, it's healthy to ask the questions, because if you don't, then that's how we get stuck with like still living in caveman times. However, I think the problem that we run into, and as you're talking through it out loud yourself, like you're like, I know we're of similar mind. Like, this is a thing that's not simply a tool. This is a thing that, like, as much as I don't like it, like, it deserves like a certain level of respect that you have to be like whether you want to call it fear or whatever, you got to be mindful of it. So that, like, that's where you talk about that slippery slope. That, you know, it's not like you're getting like, I don't know what people use for Adobe for designing their art, but I think like there may be a resolution out there. I just think it's going to take a lot of time. And I think honestly, like, you need to have regulations, but even still, like, I say that trying to like meet in the middle, I still wouldn't trust it. I still wouldn't feel comfortable. Like, I don't want to support a lot of that stuff. Like, I wouldn't want to support it.
And you know what? I at the end of the day, I don't think I do either. In fact, I know I don't. But it was just trying to look at it from like a different angle. Like, is there a place where, but it's like, you know, it's just like anything else. Like, sports betting. If you're an athlete, you can bet on sports, just not your own, Shohei. Come on now, son, as I'm wearing a Dodgers hat, you know, but it's an art and writing performance enhancer is what it is. Right.
But kind of is a funny way to look at it, but yeah, right? Like, it makes sense. Yeah. It's basically like steroids. Yeah.
So, and the one thing that you don't want from it is it to take money and jobs from hardworking artists and creators in general. And that's, you know, where I 100% say, no, it's got no place. And I think it's one of those things where you really gotta, you know, there's no place for it, or there is. And I would be on the side of there is no place for it because of that. That slippery slope of like, okay, when do the lines get blurred, and when does it start, you know, impacting people's lives?
100%. There's so much, like, so in the larger conversation, I'm not about it. When it comes to the art specifically, and this is like the arts, I think, like, it comes to storytelling as well, but like you take all the humanity out of it. Like, there's just no, I have no interest in what artificial intelligence is going to, like, the story that it's going to convey to me, because it's not, especially right now, it's not original thoughts. They're like an amalgamation of all the stuff that's on the internet. But in general, I just, like, I want to learn from other people. I want to hear experiences that are similar to ours, experiences that are very different. And then obviously, like, you know, there's so much like in between all of that. So like, that's where, when it comes to the arts, like, I just, it's not even like a mad thing, and I do it is frustrating, like, especially when you come across something and it's like, oh, that looks cool, it's like, ah, it's AI art. Like, I hate when that happens, but like, I just genuinely, like, have no interest in it. It's not even like as charged. Like, I know when I was talking to you, because I was kind of like surprised, but just in general, it's like, I don't want to read it, I don't want to look at it, like, it just it doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah.
So but at least, you know, it's Twitter's like, we all know how Twitter is. It doesn't matter what part of Twitter you're on. It is just vicious, and it's hard to have civil conversations. This is why Joe and I do what we do, so we can have these civil conversations and give you at least some room to think on it. So I appreciate you taking the tougher side on that, because I couldn't play that devil's advocate.
Well, I think it was worth at least sort of just talking about real quick, because I think it's interesting. You know, and that's just, I think, a larger problem we have today in general is like, you're either one side or the other, and you can't have that sort of civil discourse and try and see if there is a middle ground. I don't think there is a middle ground with this. I don't like it. You don't like it, but kind of trying to just look at it from a different angle and say, are we being misguided? And then you dig into it, you go, no, we're not.
Right. There's nothing wrong with having you can have a side, and but the thing is that there's always two, people always think there's two sides. It's not always the case. And yeah, even if you're on one of the labeled two sides, you should be able to talk about it. So
except for the fucking Friarbot. I'm hashtag Friarbot.
Well, that's day. I mean,
except
that's
like, NBA Friarbot sucks.
That's why you should just listen. Well, you're not allowed to listen to me. You can't tell me. You're my what is it?
Well, because you're a fucking mush.
You're my mush.
I'm not your mush. You give bad advice. Okay. I was in a group chat. Someone said, "Oh, look, Friarbot," and it had all these NBA bets. I said, "Don't do it. You're going to lose money. NBA Friarbot sucks." And guess what happened? Celtics and Suns lost, and they were both heavy favorites. I said, "Told you so." Right.
That's fine.
We bet NHL heavy favorites.
I can't give you everything, Joe. And that's the machine. Like, it's, you know, it's again, not, I just want everybody to know, like, I am not speaking out of both sides of my mouth. That is not AI. That is a tool. That is
separate. NHL Friarbot, thumbs up.
You're welcome.
NBA Friarbot, thumbs down.
Hey, you know what? NFL Friarbot, that was a whole nother monster. But that's a conversation for another day. Let's we've put off getting to catching up long enough. For me, Transformers issue 6, obviously, you know, been a killer title. John Constantine, Hellblazer, Dead in America issue 3, and then X-Men Forever issue 1 by Kieran Gillen. Those are the three things that I caught up on since we last convened. What have you been reading?
So I too caught up on Transformers issue 6. I thought I had read it, but I didn't. That one packed an emotional wallop.
Yeah, it did.
But this series has, sort of in general. Savage Red Sonja issue 5, written by Dan Panosian. That is the finale of his run on that. It was an excellent excellent story that he told there.
Nice.
I've become a Red Sonja fan for, you know, more than just the obvious reasons. Thundercats issue 2. Written by Declan Chalvey. Again, great. Introduced a new character, if you will, with that, which was awesome. Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees, issue 4. Now, this is a book. This is going to be interesting, Nicholas, because it technically debuted in October 2023. But we have a rule. Like, anything before October 2023 does not qualify for Book of the Year. Now, there's only two issues in 2023. Majority of the issues will take place in 2024.
Oh, yeah.
I am telling you this right now. Again, this and another book that I'm going to talk about today, easily contenders of the year for Book of the Year. This particular issue, I've said it before, this is Dexter meets Berenstain Bears.
Crazy.
This fucking issue blew my fucking doors off. Blew my fucking doors off, man. It was excellent. This is everything that you want in a sort of serial killer mystery type story. And it's with these cute fucking animals, man. I think it makes it even more twisted, especially the one character that you get to meet a little bit more. You go, that's some real psycho shit right there.
I'll tell you what, I love finding a diamond in the rough myself of like a title. But I also know usually I get fucked over and I can't talk about it on the show later on because we'll have the creator on. I almost get more excited now when you're the one that has the diamond in a rough.
This book is something else, man. And then I've said I was going to talk about this book.
This is something.
For a couple of weeks now, but I initially refused to fucking read it because how much I was not a fan. But TMNT, The Last Ronin 2 Re-Evolution.
Yeah.
I was not a fan of The Last Ronin 2, The Lost Years. The pacing was not great. It just told two stories that I wasn't very interested in. But I was at the comic book shop when this released, and I was like, you know what? Let me just take a look. And I'm looking at them, and I see this kick-ass cover. I was like, oh, God. I pick it up. I quickly thumb through the interiors, and I'm like, there's a lot of action in here. Fuck. Okay. I grabbed it. And I read it finally. I loved it. I told you to read it, and you said, meh. And yep. I'm like, oh, God damn it. No, it was this. So I will say that I'm still not a fan aesthetically of the look of the new, like of the Young Turtles. But that aside, that's a nitpick. The story that was told overall was very Ninja Turtle-esque. you know, in its essence, in the things that I love about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in general. So this was a very good first issue. I enjoyed it very much. I will continue to read it. I was very pleasantly, because the bar was so goddamn low, it was hard not to be pleasantly surprised. Well,
I mean, I'm more of a Radioactive Black Belt Hamsters kind of guy.
Well, we know that. Right.
But I think this is also one of those, like, where Beneath the Trees, Where Nobody Sees is a great example of like a TLDR title. I also think this is somewhat one too. Like, I don't know if you feel that strongly about it off the rip, but just like a title, it's like, oh, I know it, but like I was out on the series, like I'm just gonna move on. But you like the first issue. I know it's got a long way to go, I would imagine, but
yeah, it does, right? But I will say that, like, I didn't know what to expect when I actually started reading it. But the pacing was good, the action was good, everything about it, it was very, very solid. So yeah, I'm glad I didn't take my own advice and picked it up and read it. And the good thing about it too is that if you didn't read The Last Ronin 2, right, The Lost Years, you're fine. You don't need to read it, which is excellent, because I wouldn't recommend anyone reading it, to be honest with you. And The Last Ronin was so good. Mm-hmm. That maybe my expectations for The Lost Years was too high.
No,
but it just missed, right? But this, there's a great series. It's about, you know, 4 or 5 pages, you know, of sort of recap. That's not like, even though I read the last, it wasn't like, oh, okay, and I want to just kind of flip through it. It was like a really solid recap. So if you didn't read The Lost Years, you could read this book and get exactly what's going on and have a true appreciation for it.
Nice. Good. Well, that's again, it's a pleasant surprise. Hopefully it keeps going and then you can talk about it on the show. I'm good. I'm going to let you go on that journey by yourself. But what I'm not going to let you do by yourself is talk about all the new books that are out this week. We got quite a few trades that we do want to flag. But why don't you start us off?
Yeah. So the Sex Criminals Omnibus.
Huge.
So I'm going to buy this. But I might wait to buy it when we're in Chicago and buy it from Chip himself and have him sign it.
Ooh.
But for those who are not going to C2E2, I would recommend buying this at your local comic book shop. It's the entire series all in one volume. This book is absolutely phenomenal. Buy it, read it, love it. Rogue Sun Volume 3 is out this week, as is Ghost Rider Volume 4 and Usagi Yojimbo Saga Legends. And with that, we get to the floppies for the week, and we start with Marvel. Mm-hmm. And we have The Amazing Spider-Man issue 46, Wolverine 46. That was excellent. X-Force issue 50, Miles Morales Spider-Man issue 18, Daredevil issue 7, which continues to impress and I continue to enjoy. The Incredible Hulk issue 10, Gods issue 6, Rise of the Powers of X issue 3, Superior Spider-Man issue 5, Edge of the Spider-Verse issue 2, Cable issue 3, Thunderbolts issue 4, Spider-Punk Arms Race issue 2, Obi-Wan issue 6, Predator the Last Hunt issue 2, Jackpot and the Black Cat issue 1, and then we have 2 books. There's actually a lot of books from Marvel we read this week, but why don't you kick us off, Nicholas?
X-Men 97. We all absolutely loved the first 2 episodes of this show, and now we have a title over at Marvel. X-Men 97 issue 1, written by none other than Steve Fox, who you've heard Joe and I praise quite a bit recently. The artist is Salva Epson, and then the colorist is Matt Miller. And what I keep seeing on Twitter is people talking about how, like, leading up to X-Men 97 or after the first couple episodes, they're trying to introduce their kids to more of the X-Men, more of the animated series. And obviously, we're seeing the numbers that are coming out from Disney Plus. The thing's a huge hit.
Since the trailer dropped for X-Men 97 on Disney, you know, for Disney Plus, the X-Men, the animated series, like the original run, viewership went up for that by like 500%. I read it.
It's crazy. Today. It's crazy the numbers that it's done there. And it's awesome. Pumped about it. I'll tell you what, if your kids are asking for more, or maybe you want to like just get them away from the screen for just a couple seconds. I mean, Lord knows I used to rip X-Men back in the day. Couldn't take me when it was on the screen. I had to watch it. But if you want to give them something else to like, but they still want more of that X-Men, get them X-Men 97 issue one. I've talked about X-Men 92 also in the past. There's some collected editions. I think it's 2 volumes, 10 issues. But X-Men 97 issue one, take them to the local comic shop this week. Pick this one up. I feel like from a writing standpoint, this is going to be a really nice accent piece for those readers from the show. Like it kind of shows you some of the machinations that are going on behind the scenes that I think are going to pop up later on down the line. Epson's style like very much fits the aesthetic that we get in the show as well. So I think all around it's good, like people who, for those younger readers that are like getting into the cartoon, you can easily hand them this and say, go ahead and check this one out.
Yeah, this is a great companion piece to the show. It doesn't necessarily follow beat for beat, you know, the cartoon, which is a good thing, right? Right. But aesthetically, you know, from the character designs, it's perfect. This is a book, Nicholas, that one I would, you know, give to my nephew to read. Say, hey, you're gonna enjoy this very much. But this is also a book where if I was his age and I was like, and I saw this at the comic book shop, I would love it and I would buy it every, you know, each and every month. Like this is not like a young adult book. This is, you know, I think it's, you know, geared towards the younger reader, but that doesn't mean like it's not for anyone to read, right?
Right, 100%.
But if I was, you know, 11, 12, 13, like this is the type of book I would eat up.
Yep, 100%. I mean, look, as much as like, you know, people in our age range are all about X-Men the animated series, I mean, for like even LeBron is tweeting about it right now. That's how big this is. That series still, it feels like it's for us in a lot of ways, but it's not for us. Like it was for us back then. This comic, it's the same kind of deal. Like that's the reader we're talking about. It's for that reader. So if you want to get them into comics or, you know, introduce them to the medium, however you view it, this is an easy way to do it. 100%.
A great X-Men introductory book for new yeah. readers, for sure.
And with Steve Fox too, we've praised him a ton. He's done some really cool shit. And I think if you've like, he's done some cool X-Men stuff. So if you want something a little more adult, there's his Dark X-Men run that he did. That was 5 issues. So go pick that up for yourself at the local comic shop if you can find some copies, and then get your kid the X-Men 97. Just don't let them get your Dark X-Men, because we don't want them seeing Madeline Pryor too soon. But anyways,
don't let your kids see Nick's X-Men, you know, action figure collection either.
Oh,
we know how you pose them, Nicholas.
Yeah, you disrespected Darth Maul pretty bad. But anyways,
I didn't disrespect him. I think I did him a great justice.
Yeah, introducing him to the league for sure. You also got one other title from Marvel that you wanted to discuss this week.
Yeah, I've talked about Ultimate Spider-Man a few times now. So issue 3 is out. And again, this is sort of like an alternate universe sort of thing here. But man, again, like this is like for all the Spider-Man fans out there, this is like, it's such a good title. I love reading this each and every week because I love seeing the characters in slightly different roles, right? And because you still, at the core, like you still have, you know, these characters still have a lot of what make them so likable and why we enjoy them so much. But like, I love the idea of Peter and his daughter May, you know, sort of keeping a secret from MJ and their son, Jesus Christ, what's his name in the fucking book?
This is on you, man. I can't.
Richard. Help. And then seeing his interactions with, with Ben and with John Jonah Jameson, right? Like there's just so many fun aspects to this, while there's a sort of a darker sort of element to it, which is really, really cool. It's just a great Spider-Man book. And there's a great homage, to some of the, Spider-Man comics, of old, where, this is not a spoiler or anything, but there's a couple of panels where, Peter is coming up with different suits to wear, you know, that doesn't, that's May approved. And he sort of it just sort of shows all the different suits that he's worn, you know, sort of all over his career. The daughter is just sort of critiquing them, like, no, that one's a little scary. Dad, I know you're trying to be cool, but that's not cool, right? So it was
nice.
It was just a great fun little sequence there. So I absolutely, you know, I love sort of the Ultimate universe that's going on right now in general. We've got a couple of Ultimate titles.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is just, I mean, it's Spider-Man. One of my, you know, favorite graphic novels that was given to me a long, long time ago was Ultimate Spider-Man. Issue one by Brian Michael Bendis, and I love that, and I love it so much that I gave it to my nephew when he first started getting into comics. So,
right.
Yeah, great stuff, excellent stuff. If you haven't been reading it, get on, especially if you're a Spider-Man fan.
Awesome, yeah. I'm of course everybody's talking about it. It's one of the top books out there right now, and I have to sit and wait. But that's what I get, I guess. From Image, we got Spawn 352, King Spawn 32. Monstrous issue 50, Savage Dragon 269, Local Man, Bad Girls. I think, is this a one-off or the start of a new story?
I believe it's a one-off, and I meant to read it this week. I just didn't get a chance to do it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of number ones that we got from Image this week, and we'll get to those in a second. Philadelphia issue 34. I think there was a slight pause there. The finale of Dead Lucky issue 12. A friend of the show, Melissa Flores, that we saw her tweeting out that, and it says as much at the end, like in a letter to the readers, like this isn't the end for BB, but it is like it seems like it's the end at least of this run. I don't know if the new title will have the Dead Lucky or if it's going to be something else. Definitely too soon for you and I to see this.
I didn't know it was coming. So yeah, it took me off by surprise a bit.
Yep. Then a couple number ones, we got Sam and Twitch Case Files issue one, which I did read. I am interested with after the ending. So I will be checking out the second issue, but it was kind of just, okay.
Yeah.
And then Under York issue one, which we both checked out. Mirka Andolfo is the artist on this. So I was like, okay, I still haven't checked out Prr Evil, but I was like, I'm gonna give this a look. I haven't read Mirka in a while, and it was solid enough that I'm gonna check out the second issue.
Yeah, this is a classic case of like, okay, first issue, oh, I'm interested. Second issue is really gonna sort of make or break this series for me, because I think there's potential there. And you know, I liked the characters that were sort of introduced to in this sort of you know what it was? There was a smidge of an excellence feel towards the end.
Mm-hmm,
right,
mm-hmm.
Like right at the end.
Yep.
You know, this idea of, you know, magical people sort of you know.
Yeah, yeah. Be careful how far you go.
I was just gonna say being among us, right? It's like Harry Potter, right?
Sure.
Like,
you know,
I'm okay. Not gonna, right. That's spoiling anything.
But anyways.
Oh, okay. So with that, all right. Violet's gonna give me a jelly bean here. I want you to timestamp this, Nicholas. This, have you heard of the Bean Boozled Challenge?
I'm not.
Okay.
I don't know.
So I'm either gonna eat this jelly bean live on stream, and be able to eat it, or I'm gonna vomit on site. So give me a jelly bean, kiddo. I don't want to choose it. You choose it for me. Okay.
I hope they're not Bertie Bott's flavored.
It's kind of okay. So this is either going to be, I can't quite tell. It could be buttered popcorn. It could be rotten egg. It could be I think it's either going to be rotten egg or buttered popcorn.
Oh boy!
And I'm going to tell you right now, if this is rotten egg, I'm going to vomit all over the place.
Okay, well, that's good.
I don't want to hit you with spit jelly bean.
Yep. Oh boy. With Joe goes down. Oh my goodness. Yeah, that was.
See, oh God.
Yeah.
Well, that's my penance, Nicholas.
Good
for
grace.
Almost spoiling something.
Yeah.
Oh, good God.
So that was rotten eggs. Is that what that was?
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. This is.
Okay.
This, like I said off the top, like you should be following us on our one of our audio channels at least. I mean, video channels at least, even if you are doing audio primarily, because that was
a
sight to behold. That's good. We got to put that everywhere on social because that was something, man. My goodness.
Oh, that was disgusting. Anyways,
yeah. I'm sorry, but I'm just taking it in. Well, this is that was. Oh. Wow.
Okay. Well, that was real. That was real, folks.
Oh yeah. That I've never seen you do that before. It's rotten eggs, kiddo.
Yeah.
That's what that is. All right. We got two more titles from Image that we wanted to touch on. Feral issue one, which we've talked about a ton on the show. I did an early look. We ended up having Tony Fleece on the show. Joe's making a case for their, if they do another title that's animal related, that's going to be My Little Pony inspired with Applebottom and Boots with the Fur. But the big thing, like the elevator pitch on this one is Homeward Bound meets 28 Days Later.
Yeah.
So like it's this like, and it, honestly, I couldn't believe it when we were talking to Tony and I was like, oh yeah, it is like a like an animal zombie story with like using rabies. Like I just fucking dumbass.
I can't believe when I said that and it blew your mind and I was stunned.
I was just reading it. It's like, oh, this is like, it's just, I just read it. And it's like, oh, this is a good story. I didn't need that. But yeah. So I've never claimed to be the brightest bulb and you've never praised me as that either. So no false advertisement on this program, but Feral issue one is out this week. Obviously we love Stray Dogs. We really love talking to Tony. Check out that chat if you haven't already and make sure you go pick up Feral issue one. Don't, if you didn't add it to your pull list, you're going to want to after you read this first issue.
Yeah. Okay. So the next book that we'll talk about this again, I mentioned earlier about books of the year, right? And so this is an interesting one because this is sort of two books that are telling one story from two points of view. And of course I'm talking about, this is this week, the Six Fingers issue two, written by Dan Waters with art by Sumit Kumar. And so I mentioned this last time, right? Cause the one hand comes out first and then the Six Fingers comes out after. So when you're reading the first, you know, the first title, the one hand, right, you're getting it from the perspective of the detective, and you know he's trying to like figure out, okay, am I dealing with, you know, did I not catch the real serial killer the first time around? Are we dealing with a copycat? He's trying to figure it out. And then when we get the Six Fingers, you're getting it from the killer's perspective. And my most favorite thing about this is that by, you know, at some point in the Six Fingers, you're in the same scene that you were reading about in the one hand, but you're getting the, you know, the reverse side of it, right? Awesome. And that is such a brilliant way and a unique way to tell a story. Like you could just do this in one issue, right? But it's got a different flair to it when you're reading two, you know, different books. And then and when that happens and that juxtaposition, it's just blowing my fucking socks off. And it's going to be hard, I think, this year, Nicholas, when it all comes down to pare down which titles are up for contention for Book of the Year and then which one will take the cake. Because there's a few already and I know it's early. But like when I say that this book is excellent and a must read, I am not kidding. There's no like hyperbole. There's no fluffing. This is real, genuine. This is a book that you have to read. And I can't wait for what I hope for is that when it's all said and done, it's all put together in sort of one collected edition where it goes issue one, issue one, issue two, and you're just reading it, you know, as one story. I think that will be absolutely excellent. So the Six Fingers, fucking read it.
Yeah. Oh, I will. Cause you're telling me to read it now. So I'm not going to wait, even though you've called dibs. I'm hearing about this one. Like where we talked before about like Beneath the Trees where nobody's, that's a diamond in the rough that like, I'm just excited to experience it later. Cause you found it. I might've never known about it. You know, if we weren't doing this show, Six Fingers, like that's one where I get a little like, fuck, I have to, like, I'm waiting, like I'm sitting on the sideline. I can't do anything about this one.
I can still taste a rotten egg, Nicholas.
Well, you're going to have to, take a quick sip or something. Cause we got one more Image title to get through and it's the most important one. It's the final issue of Newbern issue 16, which when we found out about this, I think it was before issue 15, when that started like circulating that it's going to be wrapping up at the with the 16th issue. man, just like too early of an end. Like it, they, like Chip did a great job. Chip Zdarsky, Jacob Phillips. But man, like it was, the ending was very fitting. And I like, it was excited to see how he was going to wrap things up and land the plane. But at the same time, you and I were both like, and I've heard him say it too. Like he could have gone on and on with this title. I think even when he told us at the very beginning, it's like that it just had, he has room to do so much with the character. And if he ever wanted to revisit it, like I think that like there's room to visit this world in some capacity. The only other thing I did want to like highlight is like there was a player who kind of got introduced later on in this in this story, and then like the way that kind of like was wrapped together, I really appreciated that. Like it was a smaller thing, but like I'm glad that Chip like addressed that bit.
Yeah, what was excellent about that, and again, like you're 100% right, I didn't want this to end. But I think Chip is really good, and he's really on top of like knowing when to end something, right? And as much as we didn't want New Burden to end, this was, I think, a perfect ending to the story. And as you know, when we first started reading New Burden, we loved how he was always, you know, steps ahead. He always had contingency plans. And then when we get to this last arc, we're starting to see a different side of New Burden where it's like, oh, he's off the rails a little bit, right? And then just how he pulled it all together. Right, this is one of the things that Scott Snyder does so well all the time, is that like he'll have a bunch of threads out there, and then when it's all said and done, he pulls them together and it's piece de la resistance, right? Chef's kiss. It's excellent. It's perfect. And he does that here with this ending, Chip does in New Burden. You know, and there's a great little epilogue, you know, to it, and it was a very fitting ending for this story, albeit I didn't want it to end, but like it's good. You want people to leave people wanting more, right? And 100%. the way he ended it, he could take it in a couple of different really interesting directions if he were to revisit it, you know, down the line point. So New Burden is just excellent, excellent stuff.
And honestly, the way he wrote it too, and the way that everything wrapped up, it's almost like New Burden himself was writing this. Like we obviously praise Chip a ton on this show for how he just in general is writing across the board. But with this, like it just feels like he always knew, like as a writer, obviously you should have an idea of what's going on with everything. But there are times where like some writers like the approach of like, I'm going to paint myself into a corner and then figure out what the fuck I'm going to do. It feels like with this story, he always like had a plan of how things were. Like from day one of writing issue one, he knew how whenever he's going to write issue 16 or this final arc, he had that whole plan together. And it was perfect. It really was. Like New Burden, like the era of New Burden ended too soon, but it's gonna like it will live on. Like you definitely need to pick up the first two volumes. The first volume, and then the second volume is going to be coming out at some point, I would think, later in the year. Definitely want to check it out if you haven't already. We've talked about it so much. Yeah. But anyways, let me fly through some of these other ones. I know there's a couple other books we want to highlight quickly, but flying through these from Skybound, of course, Prince Through Image, we got Duke issue 4. From Boom, we got Mighty Morphin Power Rangers issue 118, which I am reading, The Expanse Dragon Tooth issue 10, and then Berserker Poetry of Madness Pen and Ink issue 1. From Dark Horse, we got The Oddly Pedestrian Life of Christopher Chaos issue 8, which you are reading, Black Hammer The End issue 6, Masterpiece, which I am reading, the fourth issue of that one, Quick Stops volume 2 issue 3, Avatar Frontiers of Pandora issue 2, Star Wars The High Republic Crash Landing issue 1, Ghostbusters Back in Town issue 1, The Goon Them That Don't Stay Dead issue 1, IDW, we got Star Trek Defiant issue 13, The Ministry of Compliance issue 4, which Joe is reading, Dungeons and Dragons Saturday Morning Adventures issue 3, and then from our friends at AWA, we got actually another trade from a title that you've talked about in the show previously.
Oh yeah, The Madness trade paperback is out this week, people. For all you trade waiters, now is your time. Go buy this book. It was my book of the year, right? It was my This is Local Man, right? Yeah, the best new title, right?
Yep.
And you read this book, you're going to fly through it because it's so engaging. And the revenge tour that the main character is on throughout this entire series, you're going to eat it up. You're going to absolutely love it. I guarantee it. Right. Men's Warehouse, stamp of approval there. No, everything about it. The storytelling, the art, it's vicious. It's gut wrenching. It's satisfying. It's all those things in one story. So if you haven't, if you didn't read the floppies when they came out, now is your time. Go buy the trade. Like if you buy anything this week, buy this.
Yep.
I can't say that enough. It was just, again, this was when the first issue dropped this, it was my favorite first issue of any AWA title dropped in 2023. And that's saying something because we got a lot of really great books from them. And so it just one issue to the next, it's just, it's everything you want in a comic book.
Yep. I am definitely going to be checking this out now. It's all collected nice and tidy for me. Cause you've raved about this and I got to see what all the hullabaloo is about. From Mad Cave, speaking of indie publishers that we talk about a lot, this one's starting to get more and more attention from us. From Mad Cave, we got Charred Remains issue 4, which I am reading, Eden Frost issue 4. And then we have Morningstar issue 1, of course, written by Tim Daniel and DB Andre, who we had on the show not too long ago, had a great time talking with him about this title. And you actually got a super early look at this one, but really enjoyed just getting a chance to, you know, talk comics with Tim and DB. Obviously, Resonant is a big one for you that you talked about on the show with the, you know, written by DB. And Tim just does so much within the industry. It's just fascinating just learning a little bit from him. I can't wait to have both of them on at some point again down the line. But Morningstar is the it's like a story set. Is it post-World War II? Is that correct? Yeah. Like it's set in the 50s or something like that? Yeah, so the art style, and I will get the artist's name in a moment, but really love like just how perfectly the style reflects that era.
Yeah, the style, the colors, everything about it. I mean, I think it was either DB or as Tim, you know, tweeted out, you know, if you want to get an, you know, read an early copy of this, you slide to my DMs, and I couldn't have slid faster. I got in there, and got it, and then we set up the interview and the chat, and they were great guys to talk to. This is an excellent story. The storytelling is fantastic. The artwork is fantastic, and it leaves you wanting more at the end of that first issue, which we talk about as being so important. So, Morningstar issue 1, make sure you pick it up.
And the art team on that is Marco Finnegan, Jason Wardy, and then the letters are by Justin Birch. So quite the team there. Then moving on, I'll finish this up just so you can catch your breath before we finally get into the mainline, the latest we've ever started a mainline episode. We got Vault. We got the final issue of The Nasty, issue 8, by friend of the show, John Lees. We didn't have review copies, otherwise we'd be talking about that as well. Very excited for that final issue. Then we got End After End, issue 9. From Titan, we got Conan the Barbarian, issue 9, Life is Strange, Forget Me Not, issue 4, Forgotten Runes, Wizard's Cult, issue 3, Ablaze, we got Traveling to Mars, issue 11, and Almost Dead, issue 3. From Dynamite, we got Red Sonja, issue 9, Negaduck, issue 5, and then Robert Jordan's The Wheel of Time, The Great Hunt, issue 5. From Distillery, we got Somna, issue 3, which is a title that I have dibs on. We do not get review copies for that either, but really been enjoying that title. And then to wrap things up, we got DC. We got Detective Comics 1083, Green Arrow, issue 10, The Flash, issue 7, Harley Quinn, 38, Batman, The Brave and the Bold, issue 11, The Penguin, issue 8, Alan Scott, The Green Lantern, issue 5, Power Girl, issue 7, Amazon's Attack, issue 6, Batman Dark Age, issue 1, and then, I don't know what the hell this is, Primer, issue 1. But enough of that, Joe. If we're ending with DC, that means you must be talking about a DC title. So what do you got for us today?
Yeah, this is a book that I've talked about a few times on the program. And I tell anyone who is a Batman fan, especially the movie The Batman, to read this book. This is Riddler, year 1. This is a DC Black Label book. This is written by Paul Dano, the actor who played the Riddler in the movie, with art by Steven Subic and letters by Clayton Cowles. And so what's unique about this is a lot of times when we see celebrity writers, they're almost always paired with an industry veteran, you know, whether it's, you know, they're writing it together or like, you know, one's there sort of kind of edit or guide or help along, right? Not the case here. This is all Paul Dano. So I was very intrigued to read this when it was first announced. And I was a bit blown away by just how good of a comic book writer Paul Dano is. Because I had no idea what to expect.
Yeah, it's not like that's just because like a celebrity goes and writes a comic, like people, he draws more attention, but that doesn't mean anything to people like us who are, you know, who read comics all the time. Like we want to read good stories. It doesn't matter who's writing it. Like we want to read quality stories. So yeah, I wasn't like going into this like, oh, like he did a great job with the character. You know, you got Steven Subic and Clayton Cowles, like you said, like it's got a good creative team, but I was like, you still got to write a good story. And so, yeah, I'm glad that it worked out well.
Yeah. And so, you can tell that Paul Dano reads a lot of comics because like,
that's awesome.
It was written in a way, you know, like that we're used to for comic books. Right. And so the pacing was on point. You could have told me that Paul Dano had been writing comics for 10 years and I would be like, yeah, it makes sense. Right.
Wow.
It just that's read amazing. Really well.
I don't think you need to tell people any more than that. That's amazing. Right.
So synopsis as depicted in Matt Reeves' hit movie, The Batman, the Riddler wasn't simply an amusing eccentric with an affinity for wordplay and baffling clues, but as terrifying a villain as any in the annals of the Dark Knight. And so I've said this, before, you know, I think Heath Ledger really does set the gold standard for villains, not just in a Batman movie, but I think just in general. But in sort of, you know, Batman's, you know, rogues gallery that we've seen cinematically over the years, I put Paul Dano right up there, you know, in his role as the Riddler, you know, because what we're used to with the Riddler, right, is sort of this, as it says in the synopsis, goofy, eccentric, wants to be the center of attention, right? But even in the animated series, right, the Riddler was attention seeking, right? And that's the antithesis of what we get from Paul Dano's Riddler in the Batman. You know, he's this recluse. You know, he likes leaving clues. He's very much that typical, you know, prototypical serial killer. Right. That, you know, you like real life where they'll leave clues because they're taunting the police. They're taunting. Right? They want to be caught, but they don't want to be caught. You know what I mean? Like they like playing that cat and mouse game. And that's what we get, you know, from Matt Reeves and Paul Dano's, you know, interpretation of the character. And so what this book does is, you know, really, you know, gives us a great origin story, you know, for that character. But also really allows us to explore that character more than what we got, you know, in the movie, right? So that was a real treat, right? Mm-hmm. To read about. This is a great companion piece to the movie. So this was 6 issues on DC Black Label, and it is on Hoopla if you're curious. So if you want to go check it out, and you have the Hoopla app, you can go find it there and read it. And I highly recommend doing so. Because it's that good. And so, you know, like I said, Dano really surprised me, you know, with his ability to write a comic book. You know, like I said, the pacing, the plotting, the suspense that he creates, you know, was excellent. And this was, you know, a must-read, top-of-the-list priority book for me every month that it came out. And I gave this book, so I would, you know, we got the review copies, but I bought the physical copies. I gave it to my nephew. I was a little skeptical doing so because the matter can get, it's a little bit more mature, but
was it Black Label?
It was Black Label, but he loved the movie so much. Right. That I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And it definitely dealt with some hard themes like mental illness. Right. And sort of that just dissension into madness that could be very real for a lot of people. Like he did a great job tapping into that. Like I talk about all the time, like with Sean Lewis, or Chip Zdarsky. Some of these writers just have this innate ability to tap into like the human condition and really get you to feel that. And he's an excellent job with that, you know, in this book. And so what we see from, you know, the character of Edward Nashton is we have a character who, you know, he's been bullied. He's been forgotten. He's been neglected. Right. But at his core, as he sort of, you know, grows up, you know, and we've got a little bit of that in the movie, but he wants to do good. And there's a huge chunk of the story where he's trying to sort of, you know, he's hired for this job. He's you know, he's a numbers guy. He figures out something isn't right. Right. He wants to do good. He knows that something is fishy. And he wants to do good, and someone takes his work, tries to pass it off as their own, and then gets swept under the rug because Gotham, as we know, at its heart, at its core, is as corrupt as anything, right? And so, like, just being marginalized, being bullied, being shut out, being, you know, shunned by society, you really, you know, in each issue, you just sort of see that slow descent into madness, and where he really feels connected is through, you know, online chat rooms, which we get, you know, a little taste of in the movie, right? But they didn't explore that enough because, you know, like it's a movie and you gotta, you know, you only have so much time to tell. But this kind of filled in a lot of those gaps. And then, you know, this book ends right where the Batman begins. So it's a great origin story for the character. It's a great companion piece. It really, I wish some of these comic book movies would do a little bit more of this. Because a lot of times when we see these types of books come out right around or just either before or after the movies, we think it's a cash grab. And a lot of times it is. But this, you could tell, was very much a passion project for Dano. Because I think, you know, he's on record of saying like how much he just wanted to continue to explore this character. And he does so in these pages. And so this is as good as any Black Label book, you know, that I've read.
Nice.
And if you love Matt Reeves, the Batman, and I would highly recommend, you know, reading this. And as for Subic's art, right, it's brilliant. It's dark. It's depressing. He really does capture that tone of what Gotham City should be. But I think I've said this before. I can't remember what book it was, but like, you know, the theme of mental illness and depression and madness, you can feel it. You get it from the writing, but you see it from the art. Like you can feel that. And it really just like it's gut wrenching, you know, for the character and for you to see it. But like, I don't want to say you sympathize, right, with the character, but you do. There's a part of you that sort of does. Sure.
Well, it's natural. Like that's why you like read stories, is like to get different perspectives. And then it's like you're ideally like you're going through like stuff that's representative of what like this type of people go through, as much as like he's a monster. So it's right. Yeah, that's like that's this sounds like when you called dibs on this book a while back, like I didn't have like the FOMO feeling that I get with some of these other titles, like with the six fingers and the one hand. But at the same time, I was also like, fuck, man! Like I was definitely gonna read that shit. You know what I mean? Like, I was right to be pissed.
Clearly. Yeah. Again, another instance. I was pleasantly surprised, and even my nephew, like, I try to get him to talk about comics, and he's a teenager, right? He doesn't want to, you know. This was a book. He was like, when I try to get him to talk about a book, this one he always like, oh yeah, this I love that. This is my favorite book, and it had some twisted covers, man. Just like it was a very twisted story, but it was very fitting for Black Label. And I hope they continue to do more of these. I know that Tom King's doing a Penguin book, right? So like just exploring these characters, like being great companion pieces to the movie. But this, I think I know Keith is a big Black Label fan, and I've told him numerous times, like, get your hands on this one. Like, this is one I've recommended to people. I'll continue to recommend to people. It's a great character study. And if you enjoyed the movie, you're going to enjoy, you know, this book.
Riddler Renaissance. Who fucking knew that we were going to get that over the last few years? Who knew we needed that? But yeah,
the Renaissance. Awesome.
Yeah, there you go. Awesome. So while Joe was talking a big two book this week. I had three books that I was considering talk to you about it, just because sometimes, you know how it is, sometimes it's hard to like figure out exactly which one you want to talk about. But I'm glad you picked this book out for me, because this one is, it's an interesting one for me in a few different ways. Nottingham, which is a Mad Cave title. And I believe, Joe, I know I'm going to talk about The Devil That Wears My Face. I don't know if I've talked about a Mad Cave title on here before, unless I'm mistaken in misremembering.
I don't think so.
Yeah. So, but I will say too, this is the first title that I saw where like it put Mad Cave on my radar, and I took a, I didn't look at it right away, and I wish I did. But at the same time, I got to binge it after the fact, and I fucking loved it. But I saw the mask that was on the cover, I believe, of the very first issue, and I was like, this looks fucking weird. And it's Nottingham, so like this has got to be like Robin Hood related. And so I'm like, what is this thing? And I just didn't check it out. But then one day, like not too long ago, I was like, oh yeah, I never fucking read that thing. I got to check it out. And oh my God, I crushed this thing. And like perfect, like serendipitous, it's coming back. Like I didn't realize it was coming back. And you said like, hey, let's do it now. It's coming back in April. So we've gotten 10 issues, and then we're getting issue 11 in April, 12 in May. I don't know how many, but so from Nottingham is written by David Hazan. Art is by Shane Connery Volk. And then colors are by Luca Romano, with letters by, in the first arc, it was Jomet Gill. And then in the second arc, I believe it was Justin Birch. So I don't know who's going to be letters on this third arc. But the synopsis is, in this twisted medieval noir, the Sheriff of Nottingham hunts a serial killer with a penchant for tax collectors. The sheriff's investigation makes him the target of England's most nefarious power brokers. That's to say nothing of the Merry Men, terrorists lurking amongst the trees of Sherwood, led by an enigma known as Hood. So we talked a long while. We talked about Once in Future a lot, obviously. And then like that is where we're taking like this age-old story, and then we're like twisting it in a few different ways. Now Kieran Gillen did it in a very like way that I think very few people would think of taking that approach. But in the course of that, he brought in Robin Hood while it was all centered around King Arthur. And you and I talked about it, how like, you know, Robin Hood is revered as a hero now. But if he like, I think if he was actually a human being back in the day, and we like, would he be beloved? Like, how would he like? Would the common folk, maybe they would love him, but obviously the wealthy would not. So it's like it's interesting. Like, you know, he's a fictional story, so he's always a hero. But if he actually existed, how would the people feel about him? And this is kind of the approach that you get with Nottingham. And in doing so, we have Hood, who's, you know, like obviously normally the hero, but he's in like, he's all twisted around in this story to be made out to like something very different. And as you learn more about him throughout the story, there's like other layers to him. It's not just like, he's like this terrorist type. There's more behind that. And as I was going back through looking at these two volumes of it, I was like, oh fuck yeah. Like I forgot that like this is like certain things that drive him, that push him. You know, King Richard is still at front of mind, but there's more to it. And by the way, too, you mentioned like how Riddler Year One is on Hoopla. You can get these two volumes on Hoopla as well. So check them out there. But while we have, you know, the Hood as just kind of like this villainous being now in this story, it's like, well, who's your hero? It's not Lady Marian, because she's kind of Hood's ally, but she's also got her own machinations at play that you start to see take shape, I believe, in the later on in the first arc, but certainly in the second. But then it's like, okay, so it's not her. Then it's like, it's just sheer fucking chaos, right? It's Sheriff of Nottingham, Everard Blackthorne, is kind of like your hero in all this. He's your central figure, at least. Like he's definitely not the villain that he normally is, but like he's like the closest thing I would say you probably have to a hero in this, because he's like trying to do the right thing. But I'll get more to the writing in a moment. When it comes to the art, Shane Connery Volk, I'm not as familiar with Shane's work, but I really liked a lot of the art was what drew me in, drew my attention initially, as with most titles, especially when you don't know the creators. The Merry Men, the masks that they have, if you just do a quick like Nottingham Mad Cave, like, you know, look on Google or Bing, I'm sure you're going to find that mask. And it's like, ooh, it's like this big ass smile on this. Like, it's very like, it'll stick with you a bit. This isn't a horror story, Joe, but I could see that if you like look at one of those masks a little bit too long, it could fuck with you.
Yeah, that's why the art on the back in your background there is something different.
Yeah, you have checked it out, yeah, because you were putting together the stuff for Instagram and everything. TLDR underscore pod if you don't follow us there already. So I would describe the smiles as like sinister, I think is the best way to go about it. But it's like, so where we're always so used to growing up, and it's like the Merry Men, like you're like Robin Hood's guys, like, yeah, we're on their side. Like just that alone, the masks alone, it's like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't think I can root for these guys this go around. I'm not sure about that. It was just I just love that twist. And then on top of that, this Volk's style is so fucking dark, very heavy on the inks. And then Romano's colors really play into that. And it's like, where I was talking before about like, you know, this view of Red Hood, like if this was based on a true story, like this is actually what it would be like. That's how I feel reading this. And a big part of that is because of Volk's style. Like I look at this and it's like, it's dark, it's dingy, you know, it's old England, medieval times. Like, you know, people are all kind of like ugly looking, which is how I assume that's how it was in the past. We all got better looking as time went along. It's just like we got taller, but it's like, it's all grim, gritty, and like just feels like old. And it's just, I love the style for this story. It is perfect. So you got that. And then from a writing standpoint, I've talked about like the Merry Men, how they're still on King Richard's side, but like they're killers and they're like, they're vicious about it too. Like the art gets very violent throughout the course of this story. And then like when we have, to bring it back to Blackthorn, like, where this, you know, the sheriff of Nottingham, that he gets referred to by his, you know, like as like Ev sometimes, Everard, like he's referred to by his full name, not so much the sheriff of Nottingham, at least from my memory. And I wonder if that's a little bit like deliberate to like help you disassociate for, like, the character you've had in the past to who you're seeing right now, as they try and kind of establish him as like this more heroic figure, which they do, but at the same time, he's still ruthless in ways. Like in some ways he kind of has to, because of the Merry Men and how like what he's the problem that he's dealing with. But at the same time, it's like, we've talked before about like, and I feel like this happens sometimes, like even on Change My Mind, like where Wes and I talk about like a show or a movie, like you want to have a character who you can like attach yourself to. And I do like that. Like, obviously you want to have like interesting characters, but at the same time, I also have moments where it's like, I'm not as attached to anybody necessarily, but I love the story that I'm seeing. And I love all the different players here. Like, there's not a clear, distinct line on who's good and who's bad. And like for this, especially where it's so far back in time, it makes it feel like I'm witnessing history and how it really would have unfolded. I'm not rooting for the sheriff of Nottingham as much as he like might be the guy I probably should root for, but I'm also like, I'm not rooting against like Robin Hood or Maid Marian and stuff like that. So it's a very interesting experience, but I don't think it's something that we often get, but I really enjoy having that. Like, and again, these are cool characters. It's not to say that they're not. It's just like where we talked before about like picking sides. It's like, you kind of got to go with the sheriff, but it's like, that's not what I'm used to doing. Like, no one does that. Like the sheriff of Nottingham, especially like if you're like a Disney fan, like he's the biggest loser in that movie.
Robin Hood and Little John walking through the forest, laughing back and forth at what there has to say, reminiscing this and that, and having such a good time. I want to read this book, man. That's fantastic.
You're gonna fucking love it, dude. You're gonna crush it. It's on Hoopla. Like, go check it out. And again, like when we talk about like taking these like classic stories, we mentioned Once in Future. Like, that is a very, like, what Kieran Gillen did there, I don't think will, like, that is so uncommon. Like, you're not, like, he just took it and twisted it in a million different ways and just took this amazing, like, approach to it. This is, like, it feels like more what I would expect. Like, where you take the story and what it was, and then you flip it around. And what does that end up looking like? And I do think for some of these kind of stories where you take like we saw, I talked about like Never Never a long while back, where you like, you try and twist it around in some ways. It's like when you do that and you find that opposite route, that is the way to success. But then again, you got to like fully buy into it, like fully commit to it. And that is what we get here. And so I can't speak highly enough of this story. Definitely go check it out. And it's a great way to get like to get introduced to Mad Cave, which is a title that we're talking about more. And I know like when it comes time to talk about when we get the finale of The Devil That Wears My Face, like that's going to be Mad Cave title number two that I talk about in here for sure.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. I want to admit something too, Nicholas. When you told me you're doing this book, it was the first time that I put two and two together and said, oh shit, this is probably a Robin Hood book. So, you know, neither of us, I will say that both of us are probably a few McNuggets short of a Happy Meal.
There you go. Yep, that's probably right. And with that, I think it's a good place to end this. Make sure, again, you subscribe to one of our audio channels. As far as we know, we don't have a Fireside Chat coming, but you never fucking know when they're coming because we have no idea when they're coming. So make sure you subscribe to one of our audio channels. Leave a 5-star rating and review. Otherwise, you're going to learn the real meaning of Backcracker and ruin his weekend, which I don't think you want either. But until next week, Joe, stay sexy.
You know it, baby.
I like Nick's just like, I'm out. All right, we're done.